south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Opportunities, opportunities. There are so many ways for gringos and expats to make money down here. Let me repeat, rule number one to having a successful business here in Latin America is never have gringos as your competition. You want Latins as your competition. You come down here, get boots on the ground for a while, and you'll see why. That's not to say that every brilliant gringo money-making idea is going to actually pan out. I mean, that's impossible, right? Take, for example, a couple of the business ventures that expat Eddie got into before he struck gold in the sushi restaurant business, which, by the way, is no longer a business you want to get into since gringos have moved in and they will be your competition. By now, most of the sushi restaurants in Latin America that were owned by Latins have either died on the vine or gringos, expats, or Europeans bought them out and took them over. And that's how it goes. By the way, most gringos and expats who come down here permanently or semi-permanently are the adventurous, creative, and chance-taking types. So often, their business ideas will come a mile a minute. They're the ones that have so many business ideas, they have to have a notebook to scribble them down. And later comes the not-so-trivial problem of deciding which business or two you want to get into, the one that has the least amount of cash in versus cash out. That's the point, right? However, there's always that percentage of gringos and expats who come down who are, on the surface, not very motivated. Now, they could be creative geniuses, but when you're not motivated, well, getting up at 10 in the morning is just fine. By the way, governments are just filled with those types. Big surprise, huh? Yep, unmotivated gringos. They're more the paint-by-the-numbers types, but they seem to do just fine down here, too. Man, you run into a lot of those on the gringo tourist trail. A lot of them spend most or all of their free time in gringo expat bars. In fact, many of them have stools and beer mugs with their names on them. Oh, and they're the first ones, you know, to offer up some, quote, good gringo expat advice. On what? Well, everything. Whether you've asked for advice or not. Then there's the smart but slightly introverted gringos and expats who come down here who are also looking to start businesses. They too can have great business ideas, but sometimes drag their feet and often don't pull the trigger. They just wait too long and someone else does, and it's usually another gringo, so there goes that opportunity. Like I said, you don't want to be in competition with other gringos, especially ones that have stolen your idea. Now, as for newly arrived older gringos and expats pushing retirement age, at first they're so excited. Soon they'll be getting their first Social Security check. Then they get business ideas too, usually brick-and-mortar business ideas. After all, they've got a lot of time on their hands, and they see business niches too. Though I'd have to say, more and more, at least younger gringos and expats are truly immersed in the digital ways to make money. You know, online practically all their waking hours, and glued to their smart devices like pretty much everyone these days who's under 35. But you know, there can be a lot of satisfaction in having a brick-and-mortar business here in Latin America. You get that real one-on-one, face-to-face people interaction that you just don't get online. Which is why some gringos and expats of the more introverted type don't necessarily start their businesses from scratch. They just buy out a Latin business and gringoize it. I've known quiet, introverted gringos and expats who are just kicking butt in a business that they bought after finding it for sale in the classified ads. And you do that by sifting through one or two of the big Latin newspapers in your area. That's where you'll find the great deals and the diamonds in the rough. No, I'm not talking about checking out the classified ads in gringo tourist areas. Now, you'll find English language newspapers and magazines all around gringo tourist areas. They'll have classified sections too, but you'll be dealing with gringo sellers, so you're not likely to find any deals there. Plus, there'll be a lot of gringo competition in the area, too. Instead, you should be checking out the big Spanish-language daily newspapers. Just go to the classifieds and check out the businesses for sale column. Usually, the column is titled Negocios en Venta. Negocios en Venta. There's where you'll find those diamonds in the rough, and dirt cheap generally, too. Think about it, a whole column full of desperate sellers who are not making it in that business, or they're just breaking even. Many times you won't believe how cheap these things are going for. So have a look. You'll see restaurants, beauty parlors, machine shops, furniture makers, printing outfits, pharmacies, health clubs, and on and on. And the truth is, most of these businesses, if tuned up by a first world gringo, could be quite profitable, even kick ass. Again, it's all about the details in Latin's, well, they're not about the details. So if something catches your eye, looks interesting, check it out thoroughly, do an inspection, call your lawyer in. That means hang around for a couple days, even a week, and watch every aspect of what's going on. Oh, and remember, most businesses in Latin America, unless they're franchises, have two sets of books, you know, the one they show the government and the real set. Hey, what's not to love about Latin America, huh? And the other very important thing you have to consider is location. No matter how great you think a certain brick-and-mortar business prospect is, no matter what the upside potential, don't even think about it if it's in a bad neighborhood. And of course, you'll know that because you'll have investigated the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great places in whatever city, town, or district you're in. That means wherever you decide to live and set up shop in Latin America, you should have boots on the ground for at least a couple of good solid months. That's really the best way to get the lay of the land. You might know that old saying, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Well, you know, over the years, I've seen a lot of gringos do that. Tropical paradises sometimes have a way of turning normally astute gringos into, well, fools. Man, I've heard 100 stories like the following. A green gringo has a buddy in Bogota or Costa Rica or Panama that entices him to come down. Or maybe he's just spent a few days on vacation in a tropical paradise and was blown away by it. Anyway, within 2 weeks, he's invested in something already. Man, if that's not a recipe for disaster, I don't know what is. Then when it fails, peters out, or crashes and burns spectacularly, they'll whine to me and say, but Johnny, they're swindlers. There were things the owners and developers never told me about. I don't get it. I did my due diligence when I was up in Cleveland. I investigated the hell out of it, everything I could find about it on the internet. Oh yeah, I know tons of gringos who've been taken or swindled or just kind of gouged. In fact, when we're talking on the gringo tourist trail, there are more gringos who've been swindled than those who haven't. And after that experience, most of them will say that Latins tell you what you want to hear. They're dishonest and, in fact, liars. Then, surprisingly enough, that same gringo will buy into another stupid deal. Yep, I know gringo suckers who've been taken 2, 3, 4 times until they've completely run out of money. Yet they don't leave, or they go to another Latin country because they just love Latin America. It's what expat Eddie calls an imperfect paradise. To which I say, I don't care where you are in the world. If you're buying a distressed business, the owner's going to stretch the truth or at least put the best face on the deal that he possibly can. And I'd bet because most of these guys are desperate sellers, they're going to lie to you. At least a little. A lot of these Latin guys who are selling businesses are just one or two payments away from losing their house or their car. And if you'd been down here as long as I have, you'd know the vast majority of Latins that look successful are just putting on the dog. Putting on the dog. What a phrase, huh? And they really are maxed out on the credit cards and late on that Toyota payment. Which is why whatever price a Latin owner puts on his business, he'll take a lot less for it. Which brings us back to expat Eddie. You know, before he found that golden business opportunity with the sushi business, who'd have thunk, huh? He tried a few other things when he first came down, matter of fact. He couldn't help but notice, especially in the small towns way off the gringo tourist trail, that every once in a while you'd see some old-timer driving a 1950s or 60s classic car. Some of them, you know, heavy metal, high horsepower machines that are, today when they're restored, expensive classics. Now Eddie, who grew up lower middle class and kind of white trash, had worked on a lot of junks and beaters back in his high school days. Now these days, up in the first world anyway, kind of a lost art, you know, tinkering with things, keeping them going, making them last. That as opposed to here in Latin America, where the locals patch things together till they can't be patched anymore. So when Eddie first got down here, he'd spot old classic cars with an eye on restoring them. He was thinking about making a little restoration shop, just a hole-in-the-wall place, he said. After all, that's all you'll need down here. My personal car mechanic doesn't even have a cement floor. He works on gravel, if you can believe it. Yep, he's got a small lot enclosed by a chain-link fence. He's got a laminate roof lean-to. And when he's jacked up a car and is working under it, he uses a nice big piece of cardboard as a cushion between his back and the gravel. It's a mess during the rainy season, as you can imagine. Anyway, Eddie's first big business idea was to buy some of these old classic cars, have a little restoration garage, fix them up, send them to the States, and make some big money. Sounds like a winner, right? Next thing you know, after he'd only been down maybe 3 or 4 months, he bought a 1963 Thunderbird, a T-Bird, for around $3,500. Looked nice enough, from a distance anyway, kind of like the original Adam West Batmobile. But like so many classic cars here in Latin America, the closer you get, the worse they look. On top of that, it barely ran. He said, you know, after I've restored this thing, I probably can get 20 or 25 grand for it. So I walked around it a couple of times, looked in the trunk, poked around a bit, looked under the hood. And the next thing I said, Eddie, where are you going to put it? Because he was staying with me. He didn't have his own place yet, much less a restoration garage. And I knew it was going to end up in my driveway. I said, Eddie, you could park it here temporarily, but no longer than a month, please. He said, don't worry, I'm looking at places now. I'll have it out of here in a couple of days. Then he gave me that prideful look like he'd just cleaned up in Vegas and said, what do you think? And I said, you know, Eddie, I have to be real honest with you here. If the thing was really tricked out and perfect, it would be worth 20 or 25 G's, but it needs way too much work. And I said, Eddie, you know what's wrong with this car? The same thing that's wrong with 98% of all the classic cars here in Latin America. It's been out in the sun way too long. You know, this isn't normal sun down here. This is a hard, hot sun. Then I poked at the rubber seal on the windshield, which has cracked and fallen apart. The seats were junk and the dashboard all faded. I said, you're going to get nitpicked to death ordering all new plastic and rubber parts that have been dried out for years. And yes, you can get all restored, even remanufactured parts for practically all the classic cars now. That's not the problem. But back then, what was it, 15 or 18 years ago, internet shopping was just getting started. Not to mention back then, the shipping cost to Latin America would kill you. On top of that, your stuff would always get stuck in customs. Then you're dealing with those lard-ass slugs in government. That means waiting a couple weeks to get notified, standing in line for a couple hours. Imagine having to go through that for every part you ordered. And it looks like you're going to have to order a couple hundred parts here. Plus, all new upholstery. All of which didn't seem to deter Eddie at all. Yep, and I've seen that attitude more than once. Typical gringo with an obsession. And believe me, down here when gringos get obsessed with a project, well, let's just say I've seen it wipe out more than a few pocketbooks. Anyway, after being extremely critical about the car, Eddie said nothing, which is his quiet way. Oh, and by the way, Eddie did what most all gringos do when they have to leave a car outside. He bought one of those protective covers. A good move. In fact, a very good move. Now, oddly enough, since Latins don't care about the details, you'll often see a very nice car in the driveway getting baked by the sun. And you'll see that same car getting baked day in and day out. And after a year or so of that, even a new car will start looking a lot older than it really is. Again, it's details, details. For $25, they could have thrown a nice cover on it. Problem solved. But Latins don't even recognize there is a problem to solve. But it's more than that. More than the $25. That's nothing. It's more like they don't want to take the cover off and on every day and stick out as the odd guy with the car cover in the parking lot. The fact is, and you've heard me say this before, upscale Latins are all about the show and they want everyone to see what a nice car they have. That's one of the main reasons they bought the thing in the first place. They want to show off. Yeah, I know. Up in the States, that's a young adult male testosterone thing. But down here, they never grow out of it. Anyway, so here in Latin America, unless you're truly driving a junk and don't care, you definitely need a car park that'll shade your car during the day. Now, if you have to drive to work and park your car in an open parking lot all day, buy one of those car covers. Though, be prepared to get some strange looks from the other guys parking in the lot. You'll be the only one doing it, you know. However, soon enough, they'll figure you're just another crazy gringo. So anyway, Eddie bought that 63 T-Bird. It sat in my driveway. And one day, about 3 weeks into Eddie's great restoration plan, I saw a big old note pinned under the windshield wiper. And wouldn't you know, it was addressed to me. It said, Dear Johnny, you were right. Now, go to hell. About 2 weeks later, I came home from a short trip, and wouldn't you know it, the car was gone. Now, a real muscle car fan might have said it was fun till Eddie towed the T-Bird away. But I digress. And you know what? Eddie never said another word about it, and I never brought it up either. Until just about 6 months ago, when Eddie said, Johnny, you remember that 63 T-Bird I had in your driveway? Then he clicked his iPad and showed me an auction that was going on up in the States. There was a fully restored 63 T-Bird, a convertible, going for around $45,000. Then he said, "Johnny, my mistake was buying a hardtop and not a convertible." Then he showed me a 63 T-Bird hardtop on the net, and it was going for around $23,000, about half of what a convertible went for. So can you believe it? After all those years, Eddie was still thinking about that damn T-Bird, which again proves human nature. You know, you could have 100 successes, and it's that one failure that sticks with you forever. Which begs the question, when you do hit on a business success, wherever you are, but we're talking about Latin America now, right? How long do you want to work and how much is enough? Now, most expats and gringos down here who are truly happy, they'll tell you they work because they have to have something to do. They got to stay busy. And usually if you follow the career path of something you love and you have a little luck, the money will come, so they say. Unless you're in art, sociology, poli-sci, business, psychology, marketing, drama, or any other liberal arts major. Oh, and speaking of luck, remember what old Benjamin Franklin once said? By the way, ever read Poor Richard's Almanac? Anyway, I think one of Benji's best sayings was this: "Isn't it funny? The harder I work, the luckier I get." Now, I have a couple of friends up in Chicago I still keep in contact with. I don't know why, since one of them is just not a nice guy. But you know, you grow up with a guy who lives down the street in your neighborhood. You ride bikes, catch frogs, steal candy, and play Little League together. Well, you kind of stay friends, even though the guy's a jerk. I'm sure some of you know what I'm talking about. And sometimes it's not a childhood friend, it's your brother or your sister. That's even worse. Anyway, this childhood friend of mine is pretty obsessed with money. Typical 50-something American, overweight, on at least 5 prescription meds. You know, 5 at 50. And I remember not so long ago, we were talking about work and money and stuff. And I said, "Brian, how long are you going to keep on working? You got tons of money. You're overweight. You're all stressed out. You're on medications. You got to change your ways, man, or you're just going to be another healthcare statistic. In fact, you are a healthcare statistic." He said, "Johnny, you know, I couldn't stop if I wanted to. This is my pace." Then I said, "So you don't have a goal then? You just work and work and work?" And he said, "Oh yeah, I have a goal. My goal is to work until my bank account matches my phone number." Then he said, "I'm coming down to live by you," which, by the way, I hope will never happen. Because, you know, there are some people you can only be friends with if they're 2,000 miles away. Which is, by the way, one of the reasons I got into the habit a long time ago of throwing my cell phone SIM card in the trash about every 6 months. Of course, you can only do that if you're not on a contract plan. Because if you've signed a long-term contract, you're stuck with that number. Now, down here in Latin America, at least 80% of the phones are of the prepaid kind. That's the non-contract type. They call them burner phones up in the States, right? It's what I use. Then you might ask, why so few phones on a contract and so many prepaid burner phones? Well, that's because to get a year-long, 18-month, or even 2-year telephone or internet contract, you have to prove you're creditworthy, that is, you're good for the monthly payment. When you sign that contract, you'll have to have references, a bank account, a credit or debit card, a cosigner, etc., etc. And here in Latin America, where you've got maybe 20 to 40% of the working population off the books, depending what country you're in, they're on a cash basis, which means they have no credit history, and thus don't qualify for a phone or internet contract. That's why there are vastly more prepaid cell phones than contract phones. I used to call them dumb phones, but they're not as dumb as they used to be. Even the low-end burner phone, like the one I have, cost me like $15, has extended features like WhatsApp, which here in Latin America is the number one universal app everyone uses. But you have to download them, which I don't. Of course, these days, one of the big objectives for gringos and expats is to remain as anonymous as possible. And to have a burner phone, man, that's anonymous. Now, of course, if you go to one of those agencies or a kiosk on the street and buy a phone with your credit card, they'll have all your information, right? There goes the anonymity. Well, not quite. Well, here's the hack that gets you back to being anonymous again. You just stop into any one of the little phone kiosks, pick the company you want to have your phone service with, there's 4 or 5 companies, and just buy another SIM chip. They're $3 or $4. And you know, every Latin American country has passed laws stating specifically that you have to register your phone once you've bought it. It's their lame effort at trying to track people. Anyway, when you buy a new SIM chip and slip it into your phone, you'll have a brand new number, right? Of course, the little guy in the hole-in-the-wall kiosk is not going to take down your information or scan your passport or anything. So how does a Latin government get you to register your phone? Well, First time you try to make a phone call, you'll get a text message asking you to put in your national ID or passport number, to which me and so many expat gringos say, good luck, fat chance, it's not going to happen. But you won't be able to initialize your phone until you comply with that request. Well, here's what many privacy-seeking gringos and expats do. They know in the particular Latin country they're in how many digits there are in a personal ID number. Let's say, for example, there's 13 digits. So when prompted on the phone, they'll just plug 13 digits in there and surprise, surprise, the phone's activated. Yeah, right, a supposedly foolproof system set up by a bunch of fools. So again, what so many freedom-loving gringos and expats have been wising up to is the fact that they can buy a SIM chip, and when prompted to put in their national ID number, even if they don't have one, they'll just stick one in that's got the right amount of digits. And then they're off to the races. So again, yet another idiot law that any idiot can opt out of. Now, when Latin governments first started passing these cell phone identification laws, something like a year or two ago now, the whole idea and how they promoted it in the media and newspapers and stuff was that now the cops and the government would be able to track people who might use telephones in extortion schemes. And they'd be able to track no good nicks using cell phones in the narco trade. Well, good luck with that, since you just heard me explain how easy it is to just slam in a number and get your phone activated, huh? All right, all together now. Duh. I mean, what's not to love about a country that's so hopelessly bogged down by retarded dumbasses that they'd even bother passing legislation like that? Now, that's a really good example to point to when someone says, well, aren't Latin countries coming right along in the Big Brother race? Yeah, well, they're in the race, but they're facing the wrong way. They're going backwards, which is a good thing. But try they will. They'll take every first world law and regulation, pass one just like it in Spanish, and forget to or just won't have enough money to create an effective enforcement branch. Again, you gotta love it. Oh, by the way, recently I was with a gringo buying a cell phone. He played the dumb gringo act. You know, no hablo español. And the little guy in the kiosk did the whole thing for him, including plugging in his own national ID number, because the gringo didn't have one. Yep, the gringo advantage rides again. Or maybe he just wanted that $3 sale in the worst way. All right, let's move on to an email. This one's from John, and I'll paraphrase a bit. He says, I just became aware of a study that I heard about on Gary Null's show, which helps to explain why Latin Americans seem to get by only taking a small amount of antibiotics instead of the whole prescribed 10 days worth. Normally, doctors will give you strict instructions to take the whole thing, but Latinos don't seem to do that. And I remember, Johnny, you discussed the drugstore slash pharmacy situation in past shows, so I thought of you right away. Turns out, just using the antibiotic till symptoms subside seems to actually work and is not apparently contributing to the bigger problem, as Big Pharma has always wanted us to believe. The article that I'm linking here is just an abstract. The full article is behind a paywall. Probably have to pay $40 to get the whole article. But anyway, if you hit the link, you'll get the summary of this new study. Signed, John. Well, John, you bring up a very interesting subject there, something most people would never give a second thought to. I never did until you sent me this email. Yep, I looked at the study you gave me the link to and wow, can't believe they were even able to publish such an article. You think Big Pharma would have brought the hammer down on them for even suggesting such a thing? That would put a huge dent in their sales. All right, so we have another crack in Big Pharma's facade. But I hardly think mainstream media is going to pick up on that one. Oh, and for those of you who aren't longtime listeners, here's what we're talking about. I mentioned on the show probably a couple of years ago now, that if you visit the bathroom in most any Latin person's house, snoop around a bit like I always do and check the medicine cabinet, turns out you're likely to see one or two little blister packs that are half-used. You know, those antibiotic pill packs that we in the first world have always been trained to finish off completely. And the common perception has been drilled into our heads over and over again. If we don't finish the whole thing, the bugs that did survive would build up a tolerance, and then the next time you had to go through a penicillin or whatever regimen again. Yeah, I know, you've heard this before. On a microscopic scale, it's basically the old saying, what doesn't kill you will make you stronger. Of course, we've all heard about those strange flesh-eating bacteria, and in the hospitals, MRSA. In the past, they could use a wide spectrum of antibiotics, and now there's only one or two left that'll actually work. Now, I mentioned in a past program that to me it was just kind of strange to see how middle, lower middle class, and poor Latins especially would get sick, take just a few antibiotic pills, recover, and get on with life. And you know, I'd even see pharmacists going along with that too. They all will sell individual pills, not a whole blister pack. So obviously, they too are buying into the fact that they can really bend the protocol. So the dirty little secret amongst Latin pharmacists is that in many cases, you really don't have to take every pill in the blister. And the results? After years and years of less is more in the pill popping department? Well, it's just the opposite of what you might think. People here in Latin America seem much healthier than first world people. The fact is, if you check the stats, they live just as long or longer, are more ambulatory when they get older. Very, very few end up in nursing homes. In fact, there are not too many nursing homes around at all. And as I said in a previous show, hip and joint replacements, well, they're almost unheard of here. Except with gringos and expats that come down. You know, it's that medical tourism thing. So when you really are sick and need an antibiotic prescription, should you scrimp on the pills? Do as the Latins do? Well, I'm not making a suggestion either way. But there you have it, the latest news, and you're captain of your own ship, so it's your call. Wait a minute, you live in the States, right? Well, then I guess you're not so much the captain of your own ship. Which is reason 2,476, why you have to get going on that plan B. Hey, you know, it looks more and more certain that someone or something is going to press the reset button up where you live. When that happens, it's not going to be pretty. You don't want to be in the thick of it. You'll want to be watching it from a nice, safe distance, far, far away. South of the border here in Latin America would be my choice, hands down. And the best, fastest, and surest way to get that Latin American Plan B going and develop a nice, solid network of friends and like-minded people to help you achieve a soft landing is to come down to my January 2018 Expat Insider Seminar. Yep, people will tell you it's a solid week of drinking from the fire hose and getting the absolutely necessary kind of boots on the ground that you'll really need. To get on the waiting list and qualify for the early bird discounts, just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you just can't make it down to the seminar or get boots on the ground yourself, well, the next best option by far is to take my Expat Essentials course. Just go to www.expatplanb.com. There'll be a free video waiting for you there. That'll explain the whole thing. And finally, at whatever step you happen to be in your own Plan B, if you get hung up along the way or need some advice, do what a lot of people have done. Set up a phone or Skype consultation with me. But first, download my consult questionnaire form from www.thenewexpat.com. Have a look. It's sure to get the wheels turning.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.